I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, and this is Travel It Radio, the show that lets you enjoy the pleasures of travel without any of the problems, all from the comfort of your easy chair. This is our 10th season and 395th episode.
At Travel It Radio, we cover all the bases. We talk to hotel people, destinations, airlines, authors, writers, entrepreneurs, and tour operators, anyone connected to the world of travel, and not only in the USA, but around the world.
And sometimes we even go beyond the world we know, and that is the case tonight when our special guest is Jerry Evans, Director of Public Relations for Explorer Fairbanks, a great town and a great state of Alaska. Welcome, Jerry, to Travel It Radio.
Well, thank you, guys. It's great to be here, and I'm looking forward to at least verbally showing off Fairbanks, Alaska to you.
Jerry, when we think of Alaska in winter, we think of cold and dark. But isn't that the best time and place to see the Northern Lights?
Well, winter is definitely the time people associate with the Northern Lights through the pictures. But in order to view the Northern Lights, you need aurora activity. You need clear skies, and you need darkness. So really, the Northern Lights are year-round in Fairbanks. The problem is it has to be dark enough in order to see them. So we say that our aurora season actually goes from August 21st through April 21st. So it's quite a wide window, and that's because August 21st, it gets dark enough for you to realistically be able to see the aurora. And so one of my favorite times to be in Alaska, and I always suggest this to visitors, is the fall, like we're talking September, maybe October, because that's a time of year you can take advantage of all the summertime opportunities without putting up with the 40 degree below zero, and you can see the Northern Lights. So it's not uncommon to see beautiful Northern Lights in late August and early September.
Isn't winter also the best time to visit because it's less costly and less crowded?
Well, that's definitely true. It is less expensive to fly. Lodgings are less expensive. And your activities are completely different in the winter time too. So a lot of that has to do with personal taste. Some people may want to come up in the summertime for gold panning and taking a riverboat down the river and nice walks, maybe some fly fishing. And other people may want to do the dog mushing, snow machining, ice fishing, aurora viewing side of things. So granted, it is a less expensive time to come up in wintertime, but winter is not for everybody.
Getting back to the Northern Lights, though, are there specific tours designed for people who want to see them?
Yeah, there are. There's no shortage of tours that will take you out. And back in the old days with aurora viewing, and when I'm saying 10 years ago or so, people to come up and view the aurora, you could see it in town, but you usually want to get out away from all the lights of what we call the big city, although it isn't. But you would stay out at maybe an aurora viewing lodge, or somebody would pick you up at your hotel and take you out of town. But what people are doing now is they're getting really smart and they're combining activities. So there are a lot of tours now that will pick you up and you will go dog mushing, leaving at 10 o'clock at night, to a cabin in the woods where they'll serve you a late night dinner and you aurora view. There are other ones that will pick you up and take you snow machining so you can ice fish, catch your own dinner while you wait for the aurora. And one of the reasons they do this is because the aurora isn't a guarantee. It's not like going to the Grand Canyon and knowing it's going to be there. There's a little bit of elusiveness to it. So if somebody goes out and they don't see the Northern Lights, at least they got to go on a dog sled ride. And on the other hand, seeing the Northern Lights is typically Alaskan. Going dog mushing is typically Alaskan. But can you imagine seeing the Northern Lights from the back of a dog sled? That's a pretty unique experience.
It sure is. So do aurora chasers have to get up in the middle of the night to see them, or are they visible as soon as it's totally dark?
It's rarer. The ideal time is usually between 10 o'clock at night and 2 in the morning. And I get up ridiculously early around 5:30 in the morning to take my dog out for a walk. And it's not uncommon in the winter for me to see the northern lights in the morning, but usually it will be after 10 o'clock. So you kind of have to you have to plan on staying up for the aurora, because I've heard people that have missed them because at midnight they thought, well, they're not coming out. And guess what? 12:15, they come out. So so ideally 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock is a great time to see the aurora.
That's great. We're talking Fairbanks, Alaska with Jerry Evans.
Jerry, what makes the Northern Lights such an attraction in Fairbanks? Is it the low light pollution, the distance from the coast, or the low precipitation?
It's all of those things, and actually a little bit more. You're right with the low light pollution, because there are, especially in interior Alaska, and that's why Fairbanks gets pointed out as one of the best places, not only in the U.S., but on the planet to see the aurora. It's the low light population, and it is a distance from the coast or low precipitation. It's almost like a desert climate up here in the wintertime. And I'll give you a good example. A lot of people look to Fairbanks, Alaska, and Tromso, Norway, as being two of the ideal places to see the Northern Lights or the Aurora Borealis. But Tromso has, in the month of February, they have 3.5 inches of precipitation. Fairbanks, in that same month, only has 0.5 inch of precipitation. So what that means is less precipitation, fewer clouds, and a better chance of seeing the aurora.
Is it true there's an aurora tracker on the Explore Fairbanks website? And how does it work? I know there's some connection to the University of Alaska's Geophysical Institute, since it offers both real-time and three-day forecasts.
Yeah, you guys have done your research. Very good. It is the aurora tracker is very unique. It's really a one-of-a-kind digital invention that we had somebody create for us, because it's the only digital or website-type app where it combines weather conditions and aurora forecasts and location and the amount of light. So if you wanted to try to determine if it was a good night or a good place to see the aurora in Fairbanks on your own, you might have an app that would tell you what the forecast is going to be like for the aurora. Then you'd have to check the weather conditions to make sure you have clear skies. And then you would have to see if it's cloudy here, is it better somewhere else? And then you'd have to know if it's dark enough to actually be able to see the aurora. Well, the aurora tracker combines all of those things, and it does it for different locations. So on an evening, and it can go out 3 days in advance. So if you're here for 3 or 4 days, you could look at the aurora tracker. And if I was looking at tonight, it might be a poor night to view it in Fairbanks, but it might be a good night to view it 60 miles away at Chena Hot Springs or 150 miles north above the Arctic Circle. So it not only, and that's what we call it, aurora chasing as well, because it will tell you the best time and the best places to see the aurora and what the odds are. So although we want you to stay up all night to try to see the aurora while you're here, if it's a cloudy night everywhere, it might be a good night to get a good night's sleep so you can stay up and watch it the next night.
Now, Jerry, I know Denali National Park, home of Mount McKinley, isn't far from Fairbanks, but is the park open during the winter?
It is open. Some of the facilities wouldn't be the same. In the summertime, there are robust visitor centers, and it's more of a condensed visitor center in the wintertime. But one of the advantages going to the park in the wintertime, in the summer, you can only drive your personal vehicle so far into the park because there are more visitors, and so you have to get on buses to go further in. But in the wintertime, you can drive in as far as they plow the road, and that's usually 3 miles to 15 miles, depending on the conditions. So you can drive on your own well into the park, and if it's a beautiful day, you can get out and walk even further than that. So it is a nice time to visit in the summertime. I wouldn't exactly say it's crowded in the I wouldn't say it's crowded in the summertime, but in the wintertime, it can seem like you're the only person on the planet. You can drive in and just not see another vehicle.
Jerry, I remember taking a train to and from Denali, but that was in the summer. Can winter visitors do the same thing?
Well, the trains in the summertime, there are two trains a day, one going from Anchorage north to Fairbanks and one going south from Fairbanks back down to Anchorage. So you can do that in the summertime where you would take the train down to Denali, be able on the southbound train, be able to spend 3 or 4 hours tooling around and hiking and taking it all in, and then get on the northbound train and coming up. Now, during the wintertime, there's usually between one and two, we call them winter trains, but it only goes in one direction. It will come north on one day and south on the other. So there are tour companies in the wintertime that can drive you down to Denali and drive you into the park and drive around, and then you would get on the train to come back. So in this wintertime, you can't take the train both ways, but you can certainly take it one direction.
Can Fairbanks visitors get to the Arctic Circle if they want to add that to their travel bucket list?
It's surprisingly close but difficult to get to on your own. It's about 140 to 150 miles north of Fairbanks, the Arctic Circle. And the roads are very rough. Now, there are tour companies that will drive you up just to the Arctic Circle if that's what you want. And there are some that will take you much further near gates of the Arctic National Park. And you can spend the night there, and they'll drive you up and drive you back, or they'll drive you up and fly you back. But the road conditions are very hard on vehicles, so most of the rent-a-car companies here will not let you drive a car on that road, because it can be very brutal on your own personal car. So there are tour companies that will take you there, and it's fairly easy to get to. You can get up there in a couple hours.
We're talking Fairbanks, Alaska with Jerry Evans.
What are some of the other things you'd recommend to winter visitors, Jerry? I know you've got everything from snowmobiles to ice hockey, but can people ride a real dog sled? You mentioned that earlier.
Oh, yeah, they sure can. And there are a lot of great groups up here that will take you out dog mushing or dog sledding. And you can do it a number of different ways. There are short rides where you would sit in the basket and let somebody take you out and do the driving. I'm doing air quotes, drive you. Or there are some where they will let you actually run the dog sled. There's a good chance you might fly off the back at one point or another, but at least you're falling in soft snow, so that's good. But yeah, there are a number of different ways, and you can take a half hour ride to a day long trip. There's some great companies, and if you've ever been around sled dogs, they're such beautiful creatures, and they can't wait to get out and run. They get so excited when visitors show up because they know they're going to get out and run.
Aww. And we hear rumors about outdoor hot springs that tourists can enjoy at the end of a long day of hiking or sightseeing. Is it like a real-life hot tub?
Well, it kind of is. The closest one and the most popular is Chena Hot Springs, which is a resort where you can actually spend the night, too. So it's a natural outdoor hot spring. So they have a building if you want to stay inside or if you have young children. But it is an outdoor rock pool that has the hot springs water coming in one end and out the other, and it's one of the most relaxing things you could possibly do. So you can go in the hot springs in the summertime or in the winter. My preference is to go in the winter time because the contrast between it being 20 or 30 below outside and you're sitting down in the nice hot springs, that contrast is just so unique. And on a good night, you can actually see the northern lights from inside the hot springs.
Oh my.
Yes. It's beautiful. They even have an ice museum there. With some international ice carvers, an ice museum with an ice bar, so you can have a apple martini in an ice martini glass.
Oh.
And you can do that year round. Go ahead.
I think it would melt in my hot little hands.
Well, the inside the ice museum, it's cold enough year round, so it keeps it's about 20 above, so it keeps everything frozen. But it's a very unique experience if you visit the ice museum in the winter, because sometimes it's so cold outside you have to go inside the ice museum to warm up. True story.
In case of inclement weather, both winter and summer, do you have indoor alternatives such as museums, art galleries, and shops with made-in-Alaska products?
Plenty of them. We have some great museums up here. The University of Alaska Museum of the North is located here. We have a world-class auto museum, the Fountainhead Auto Museum, which is amazing. It's not only the automobiles, but it's the period clothing that goes along with it. It's people walk in there and they wonder why that is in Fairbanks, Alaska, because it really is world-class caliber. There's community museums, there's aviation museums, there's pioneer museums, railroad museums, so and a lot of shops, great art galleries, and breweries and distilleries are something that's really come around here in the interior. So if it's a rainy day or if it's too cold or if you just want to explore, there's plenty to do inside as well.
Are most Fairbanks restaurants open all year, or do they primarily cater to summer crowds?
Most of them stay open year-round. There are a few that are angled more toward our visitors, which would be in Denali Park and maybe one at a Princess Hotel. A few of the hotels, the restaurants in those close, but there are a lot of great dining options year round. So for the most part, they stay open year round here.
We're talking Fairbanks, Alaska with Jerry Evans.
And Jerry, how about hotels? Do they range from historic places and lodges to state-of-the-art luxury properties?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily call any of our properties luxury, but I sure would call there are historic lodges. There are some, and there are some modern, there's Marriott hotels and that type of stuff. But I don't know as though I'd consider any of them. They're not Four Seasons. Maybe we'll call them Three Seasons because it's not quite as nice as a Four Season, but they're pretty nice. But they're very unique. And very comfortable and very clean, and a lot of options from, like I say, the Marriott to the chain hotels to the very unique lodges and the smaller bed and breakfasts in historic buildings. And so there are a lot of options for everybody.
And what's the average length of stay?
It varies a lot. I'm thinking 4 to 5, maybe 6 days would be a comfortable time to take in everything that's in our area. A lot of times people will come up through tour companies and they will spend a day, which is really not enough to take a deep breath, to relax and truly explore. So I think it all depends if this is your only destination in Alaska and you're using this as a springboard to Denali and a springboard up above the Arctic Circle, you're probably looking at 5, 6, 7 days. But if you're trying to explore a lot more of the state, keeping in mind it's a big state, 2 or 3 days would probably be a good idea for Fairbanks.
And how about the peak and bargain seasons? I'm guessing spring and fall for the bargain seasons?
They are, yep. It's always a little less expensive through the tour companies at the hotels in the spring and the fall, and I will make a suggestion for your listeners. I don't tell everybody this because they're about the same price on the spring side and the fall side. But again, I am in love with my favorite time of year in Alaska is the fall side, because in the spring, things are not green yet. They're getting ready to be green. But in the fall, there's that rich, dark green. The colors are turning. You're being able to see the aurora. You can do all the summertime activities. So if you're trying to decide between one of the shoulder seasons, they both, you know, they both are nice, but I would go for the fall.
Okay, you're listening to Travel Itch Radio with Dan Schlossberg and Mary Ellen Nugent Lee. Listen live on iTunes or blogtalkradio.com or check out the archive show on our Facebook page. And we're talking Fairbanks tonight with Jerry Evans.
Jerry, we know your summer season is short, but does it usually run from Memorial Day to Labor Day? And tell us, what are some of your favorite things to do in the summer?
Summertime here is what we call the payoff, because we love winter, but when summertime is here, that's really what we live for. We sleep a lot less. The inside of our houses become a mess because nobody wants to be inside because it's so nice outside. And the summertime is just the opposite of the winter, because, of course, in the winter, it's cold and it's dark most of the time. And in the summertime, we call it the land of the midnight sun because there are 70 days where you get straight daylight, straight sunshine. Mm-hmm. So it never gets dark for 70 days, which means an activity like fishing or going hiking or bicycling is great up here in the summertime, but there's something really unique about being able to do it at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning. There are a lot of people that play a round of golf with the midnight tea time. Yes. So there's a lot to do up here in the summertime, and it's kind of hard to sleep because everything is going on. One of the great things about the summer up here is that our growing season is very short, but it's very intense, again, with the 24 hours of daylight. So our farmers markets are amazing. It's the vegetation, the flowers, and the vegetables, they almost explode out of the ground because it all happens so quick. Everything happens here very quickly. Our fall, in some places, it may take 2 or 3 months for the leaves to slowly change and fall from the tree. I always say here it's green, yellow, red, and down. It almost happens that fast.
And, of course, as a baseball fan, I'm well aware of the midnight sun game played by the Alaska Gold Panthers in Fairbanks on the date of the summer solstice in June. Since people are now planning summer travel, can you tell us more about that?
I sure can. And, Dan, you have not been here for the midnight sun game, have you?
No, I have not.
Oh, well, that's something we're going to have to change. So the midnight sun baseball game started back in 1906 as a bar bet between two of our local bars, the Eagles Club and something called the California Bar. So they had this bet, and they played this midnight sun game late at night. They start the games, and it's been going on every year since 1906. The game is played at 10:30 at night, the first pitch, and usually lasts until anywhere between like 1-2 o'clock in the morning. And the unique thing about the midnight sun game up here is it's played without any artificial lighting. So it's played on summer solstice, which is June 21st. And so when I tell you that it's light enough to do most activities, Dan, could you imagine standing at home plate at 1 o'clock in the morning and having it be light enough so you're okay with somebody throwing a 90-mile-an-hour fastball at you?
No, I don't think so. And I know Tom Seaver played there.
Tom Seaver, a host of Hall of Famers, Dave Winfield, Terry Francona, Harold Jason Giambi, Bill Spaceman Lee was just here recently. I came back up to help celebrate the Midnight Sun game. So it's a very unique experience if you're a baseball fan or a sports fan. They play it every year on June 21st. Now, of course, this prior year in 2020, they had to do a makeshift game to kind of keep it going on. Now, we're not exactly sure where this summer will be, if it will be the Alaska Gold Panthers, which is our baseball team that has played here since 1960. We're not sure if the Gold Panthers are going to be involved and they'll be playing a team from out of state, or if it will be in-state players, because, again, it's kind of hard to tell what this summer will have in store, but on your average summer, the Alaska Gold Panthers play, and it's sold out, and it's just a great festive experience.
Well, we're all hoping for that. Now, to get maximum mileage from minimal cost, should Fairbanks visitors sign up with tour companies, or is it best to travel on their own?
Well, I haven't done a dollar-to-dollar, but I'm guessing you would have more control out of the money that goes out of your pocket if you're doing it as an independent traveler. But again, I think that's kind of something that's a personal preference. There are a lot of people who want to know that everything is planned and they're going to get to do everything. If they're up here for 2-3 days with the tour company, they know they're going to go down the riverboat Discovery. They know they're going to go panning. They know they're going to the hot springs and they'll do all this. And these are all things that you can do on your own, but it just takes a little bit more. You probably would have to rent a car or plan things out a little bit better. Now, I work at Explore Fairbanks, which is a fancy way of saying our visitors bureau or our visitors bureau. So that's always a place that we suggest people visit if they're traveling independently. We're in the Morris Thompson building. It's Explore Fairbanks. And we have people standing by to answer any questions. If you have something that you would like to do, we have brochures, we have maps. The folks there are great. The one thing that you'll find when you come to Fairbanks is we treat visitors like we treat our out-of-town friends. It's like we love it here. We like to show people why we love it here, and we kind of like to show it off a little bit. So it's certainly kind of place where you can do independent traveling and probably save yourself a little bit of money, but not everybody is in that situation to do that. So they may come up with the tour company.
Well, what's the best way to get to Fairbanks? If most visitors come by plane, does your airport do a good job of keeping the runways open all year?
They do. It's one thing we never, I mean, certainly they plow the runways, but it's something that really doesn't hinder the air traffic in or out. So a lot of people will fly in and out of Fairbanks. If you want to try to take in a little bit more of the state, some people will fly into Fairbanks, take the train down to Anchorage, and then fly out from there. Fairbanks is also the end of the Alaska Highway. So we have a lot of people who come up in motorhomes where they can really spend some time up here and explore and get to know the people and the feeling. So a lot of people drive, a lot of people fly, and we jokingly say that Fairbanks is the farthest north cruise port. And the reason why we say that is because the cruises come in around Seward and they come up through the southeast, the beautiful areas, Sitka, Juneau, Ketchikan, and they get off near Anchorage. And a lot of tour companies, as an optional shore excursion, will put people on a train, spend a night in Denali, you come up to Fairbanks, you spend a day or two here.
Okay, Jerry, running out of time,
home.
So Jerry, tell our listeners how to get the Fairbanks Winter Guide, please.
Fairbanks Winter Guide and more information and everything you would need is available by just going to explorefairbanks.com. We have great brochures, we have great videos, we've got great ideas, beautiful pictures. So if you're curious at all, explorefairbanks.com.
Our guest tonight has been Jerry Evans, PR Director of Explore Fairbanks. Thank you for joining us on Travel with Radio, Jerry.
Thank you, Marianne. Thank you, Dan. It's been a pleasure.
And that's it for this edition. Next week, same time, same station, same writers, same announcers. Our guest will be Merrill Perlstein talking about great things to do in New York City. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg along with Mariella Nugent Lee saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night and stay safe.